Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I can't help but comment on some of the comments that were made in the news, principally by Democrats in America, regarding the horribleness of shutting down the U.S. government. One woman in Shrill Voice said that there'll be no more formula for children, as if mothers can't breastfeed, as if it was appropriate to have a child when you don't even have enough money to feed the child, much less clothe the child and care for the child. And that the president's saying that this is a bad habit which must be broken, yes, being responsible, not increasing one's spending when one is hugely in debt. We must break that habit, and we must continue to increase spending while we are in debt. Yes, when you hear such statements, ladies and gentlemen, think, what do such statements reveal? They reveal that there's absolutely no hope for this country. It can't be resolved. I mean, all we're talking about here is slowing the increase to the fastest increasing part of the U.S. deficit, and there is absolutely no discussion, no sense of responsibility to doing that. And there is all the rhetoric in the world that says that by not continuing to spend like drunken sailors, that we're damaging the economy, that we're killing little children because they'll have nothing to eat. We've lost it. America has killed itself. It died long ago. Now, based upon that reality, what are you going to do? Are you going to cling to false hope? Are you going to say, because my normal has been normal for so long, I can't imagine my normal not existing this way any longer? Do you realize that just overnight, that the U.S. dollar, the U.S. economy, and its credibility could be embraced by the rest of the world, and making it impossible for America to borrow money, that its status as a reserve currency would go away, and literally, in the overnight hours, America could be destitute, and will be, broke, total anarchy, your currency valueless, your savings accounts valueless, complete and total anarchy. We're on that cusp. I can't tell you if the myth can be punted down the road another 5 years, another 10 years, or another 15 years. But I'm telling you that the illusion that America is economically viable, politically viable, has no hope of being continued for more than 15 years. That's your timeline. It's over. So where are you going to turn? Are you going to give up? Turn to drugs? Are you going to insanely cling to false hope, thinking that more of the same is going to produce a different result? Definition of insanity? Or are you going to turn to the one reliable source? The one source who has laid out his agenda, who has told us exactly what he was offering, who he is, what he expected so many years ago, and hasn't changed his philosophy on any of this forever, and has proven to be 100% dependable in everything he said. Are you going to turn to him? Or are you going to continue to be delusional, clinging to the false hope of politics and religion? Those are your choices. We have Nick on the line, one of my favorite callers from Wisconsin. Hello, Nick. Welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Good morning. So anyway, what Republicans propose is to spend even more than Obama would spend otherwise with Obamacare funded, but sequester left in place. And that's what's not making sense. How can they propose, defunding Obama is very popular these days, but I'm doing the sequester with it, and in total spending more than Obama would. That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, the question really is, how much more in aggregate will national health care, the increase, and it's a 30% increase in the number of participants in the Medicaid aspect of nationalized health care. And so a 30% increase in Medicaid, and Medicaid is actually cheaper than Medicare, because 80% of the cost of medical care is spent in the last 5 to 10 years of one's life, and Medicare is for the elderly, Medicaid is for the poor. So what they're saying here in their most recent proposal, and this is really foolish of them. I'm in your camp here. They're saying, all right, we'll fund Obamacare, which is the increase in Medicaid poor participants, a 30% increase in their quantity, but we want the sequester cuts to remain in effect. The sequester cuts were cuts across the board to discretionary spending, which means primarily Department of Defense spending, that collectively were about $275 billion. And so they want those to stay in effect. And I think those cuts, by the way, that savings was over a 10-year period, not a 1-year period. But nonetheless, they want those things to stay in effect, and we'll say, okay, we'll fund Obamacare for a year. You know, it's a way to, I guess, to show an olive branch to the president who wants to pretend like he is a dictator, and that there's no checks and balances within the U.S. government, and there's no need for a dictator to negotiate with the other branches of government.
As they did before, they somehow, I'm talking about Republicans, are able to snatch the defeat from the jaws of success.
Right, yeah, exactly. Like,
they want to prolong for a year. What were they thinking? The people,
right.
People ain't gonna feel no pain. They're gonna still vote
right.
for a Democrat. And Obama just
Correct.
Gonna say, well, if the Republicans wouldn't interfere, then the whole thing would be nice. But they like,
right.
they don't like this, and then they don't like
right.
that, and there you go. There's your Hillary Clinton
yep.
coming in the future.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. Hillary Clinton will be elected president. She'll be come in as the new savior.
Do we call our senators or do we email them or do we do we go on outside and start pounding the doors?
Yeah, what you've come to realize is that the Republicans are no better than the Democrats. That they have snatched deceit out of the jaws of victory, if you will. That their is dishonest, is duplicitous, as are the Republicans, as the Democrats. As a matter of fact, you know, when George Bush, the Republican Congress, came into power, what now about 8 plus 5 years ago, 13 years ago. They inherited a $350 billion surplus, you know, mostly because of the contract with America that Newt Gingrich orchestrated. But they inherited a budget surplus. And over their 8 years in control of Washington, they turned a $350 billion surplus into a $1 trillion deficit. And so the idea that the Democrats are responsible for the deficit, not the Republican, is a myth.
Yeah,
and now the Republicans want to blame the Democrat.
Clinton have repealed the Glass-Steagall, and I heard that that's why the he had a surplus, because institutions started to collide together, and with the somehow spiking up the growth.
Yeah, actually what happened was that the contract with America, and this is important, and the reason we're going to talk about this even in the second hour here with Nick, is that when you realize that Americans have have neglected the Constitution and the advice of the Founding Fathers to put ourselves in this size of a mess. It is analogous to what the world has done relative to the advice of Yahweh as articulated in his Torah, which is the Constitution of the Covenant, and what the Founding Fathers of the Covenant had to say. It's exactly analogous, so it is germane to our discussion here. What happened to create the what is called the Clinton surplus is that Newt Gingrich came up with I believe it was a 20-point plan, but certainly 10. But the 10 points were to rein in government spending and to lower taxation. And by lowering taxation, the economy grew, and therefore a smaller percentage of a larger pie generated more revenue. And so the government took in more revenue, and it spent less money because there were constraints on spending based upon the contract with America. And while Clinton ran against it and ran against the Republicans, when the Republicans won overwhelmingly in Congress during the midterms, Clinton said, well, what if I just embrace it? What if I attack the messenger, which was Newt Gingrich, and I vilify him, but I claim credit for everything that is positive in the contract with America, which is precisely what he did, which is why we had the surpluses. And then King George II comes into power, and he turns that surplus into a great deficit.
If only we could figure out on how to lay out what you just said in few simple words. So then rest of the America wouldn't get bored with us explaining.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to tell that story in the first segment today. A very simple story. Sometimes parables are the most effective ways to communicate. The whole purpose of that parable was to show how we have behaved relative to the Social Security trust fund and why we find ourselves in such debt and yet so covetous of what we think that we are owed. My feeling, conclusions on this, Nick, is the same as mine regarding the Torah, which is whether somebody is political or they're religious, their mind is not open, that reason and evidence don't make any difference. And what I'm hoping, Nick, is that more people like you have come to realize that politics and religion are the problem, and that therefore their mind will be open to evidence and reasons why we do this program. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We, in the last segment, were comparing the American Constitution and how Americans have become ignorant of what their Constitution says. Americans have become adverse to what their Constitution says. Most Americans want restrictions on gun ownership when the Constitution does not allow that. They want restrictions on free speech when they think that speech is hateful, even though the Constitution does not allow that. They want all of the benefits of Social Security and Medicare, even though there's no wealth redistribution clause in the U.S. Constitution. We've essentially ignored our Constitution. And this is analogous to the fact that most people around the world have ignored, even rejected, opposed Yahweh's Constitution, which is his Torah. And when you ignore the Constitution of the land or the Constitution of life, there's consequences. When you're self-indulgent and you don't take responsibility for your own decisions, there's consequences. When you're unwilling to consider the evidence and think rationally, and you make choices that are motivated by faith or by patriotism, there's consequences. You know, Americans aren't willing to consider the testimony of their founding father, smartest man ever to live in America, about a constant state of war and about a standing military. Nope, that you ask 100 Americans and 99 out of 100 will be patriotic and say, I support my troops and they have defended my freedom and they're providing a service to the country. And the opposite is true. They've robbed Americans of their freedom because of the enormous cost and the propaganda and the fraud and the concentration of power and the taxation and the debt that goes along with such things. So, here we are. What are we going to do? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn to the constitution of life. It's called the Torah. The Torah means teaching, guidance, instructions, and directions. The constitution of life was authored by the architect of life. His name is Yahweh. You can know him. He began to teach us some things that I think were germane to our understanding, particularly in terms of God's willingness because of free will. And free will is an absolute necessity if you want to form a loving relationship, to allow HaSatan, the adversary, to slither into the garden and to corrupt his testimony, doing what every religion has done, which is that rather than making up their own offer, religions all capitalize on something God has said, take what he said out of context, they add to it, they subtract from it, to deliver an entirely different proposition, one that is a counterfeit and therefore worthless. And in every case, HaSatan doesn't do this on his own, but instead works through men and women to achieve his goals, and they become willing participants in religion. Here's the story. It says the serpent was, is, and will be reasonable and cunning. Yeah, his religious counterfeits seem credible. Oh boy, they are, however, shrewd more than any living thing relative to the open field that Yahweh God had made. The open field is that which the life, death, that was occurring outside of the garden. He said to the woman, so this is HaSatan, he chose to attack the woman. Why? Because Chawa's name means life giver. She represents the source of life. He said to the woman, who had spent less time with Yahweh and therefore was more susceptible to being deceived, just as you are more susceptible to being deceived by religion and politics if you don't study Yahweh's constitution, his Torah. He said to the woman and wife, Isha, indeed, so what? If God said not to eat from any tree in the protective garden enclosure. Exactly what Paul wrote. So what? If God wrote the Torah, doesn't apply anymore. So what? If he said that there are terms and conditions of the covenant. So what? If he asked you to be circumcised if you want to participate in a relationship with him. So what if God said these things? But I say, the same approach. It's the same approach that Muhammad took in the formation of Islam. So the wife and woman said to the serpent, we can eat the fruit from the trees in the protected garden enclosure, but from the fruit tree which is relationally in the middle of the sheltered garden enclosure, God said, do not eat from this one, don't even touch it, lest you die. She subtracted from and added to God's testimony. So, Chawa said that you ought not eat from the tree in the middle of the sheltered garden enclosure. She forgot the name of the tree, which the name of the tree explains what the purpose of the tree was, its choice, the knowledge, an understanding of both good and evil. All that she knew up to that point was good, but she had to have the choice to choose evil for the relationship to be anything other than robotic with Yahweh. But she omitted the name of the tree. She reduced, subtracted from God's Torah teaching. And then she added to it and said, don't even touch it. I didn't say that. When we subtract from and we add to the Torah, which is the one thing that Yahweh warned us about and said, do not do, we create religion. The whole basis of rabbinic Judaism. Remove God's name from his testimony. Remove his terms and conditions of his covenant. Remove his path to salvation. And replace it with rabbinical arguments. subtract from, add to. Paul was the most obvious about this. He subtracted the entire Torah and then added his New Testament, his faith. It's exactly what Chawa was doing here. The exact path that HaSatan would follow with those that he demon-possessed like Paul and Muhammad after him. When you add to and take away from the constitution of life, you end up with death. That's all there is to it. Just as America will die as a result of adding to and taking away from its constitution. There's a profound lesson here. It's a lesson that my guess is that less than 1 in a million people have ever conceived, ever thought about. But the constitution of life is the Torah. Chawa subtracted from it, and then she added to it. The result is death. It's the consequence. But the venomous reptile, the poisonous serpent, which is a metaphor for HaSatan, and we spoke of all of the ways that these poisonous, the venomous serpent, serves as an apt metaphor for the adversary, said to the woman and wife, the Isha, you shall not die a physical death. He told her a half-truth. She would eventually, but not that very instant. It was a half-truth. It is the basis of religion. It's the basis of all credible lies. It was true up to a point, and that is what made Satan's deception credible. Outright lies seldom fool anyone. But when truth is twisted, when the counterfeit resembles the genuine article, it is beguiling. That is the nature of Christianity, my friends. It is a half-truth, which is why it is appealing. If Paul had created Christianity out of whole new cloth and said, you disregard everything that God said, and this is my alternative, which has absolutely nothing to do with God, and he wasn't trying to pass off his bogus bill as if it were his own invention, there would be no Christianity today. But that's not how deceivers deceive. That's why when I tell people that Christianity is satanic, its messenger was demon-possessed by his own admission, and that literally the whole concept of Christianity is Satan's greatest desire, which is that there would be a misappropriation of Passover and a fixation on the death of the Passover lamb. And then from there, nothing but Babylonian religious rhetoric. Because when you do that, and you get people to focus on Passover, but to ignore matzah, what you get is the same thing that Satan has. It's eternal incarceration. Because by celebrating Passover, even though you don't know what it represents, and the death of the Passover lamb, and you think that is the solution, then you become immortal. Your soul becomes immortal. But because you don't engage in and participate in, you don't embrace unyeasted bread, the poison of religion and politics still stains your soul, and therefore you're eternally separated from God. Eternal separation is incarceration in Sheol, which is where HaSatan is destined. The ultimate misery loves company. Subtracted from and added to. Babylonian myths added to a God that no longer had a constitution. Subtracted from. Islam, Catholicism, and Mormonism are effective because they have piled their lies right on top of Yahweh's testimony, concealing his truth by piling their lies there. This gives them credibility that they wouldn't otherwise engender. At the same time, it precludes most people from posing the most effective argument against them. If a religion contradicts that which it derives its authority, it cannot be true. The Quran says that it derives its authority from the Torah, and yet it contradicts it in every possible way. Therefore, if you are informed and rational, you cannot be a Muslim. Christianity derives its credibility and authority from the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and yet the New Testament contradicts the Torah, prophets, and Psalms in every possible way. And therefore, if you are rational and informed, you cannot be a Christian. You know, there's this myth that a satanic religion needs to be of the occult, where they're overtly worshiping Satan. And we spoke about this in a previous program. That's the opposite of what Satan wants. Satan doesn't want to be known as the adversary. He doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary. He wants to be worshipped as God. And so Christianity and Islam exist to turn Satan into their God. So those who are duped by the religion actually are paying homage to the adversary, to the Lord. It is as simple as this. If Yahweh's words are true, and they are, then religions like Catholicism, Islam, Mormonism, which contradict Yahweh's testimony, cannot be true. If Yahweh's word is not true, then religions which claim Yahweh's testimony was divinely inspired, and religions which garnered their authority based upon God's testimony, such as Mormonism, Islam, and Christianity, they are, by definition, then false. While the simple logical exercise renders the three most famous religions in the world, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, undeniably false, something any informed and rational person will immediately recognize, the false dogmas prevail because very few people are informed and rational. You know, in the last segment, when we were talking about, you know, now that we know that the Republicans are as unconstitutional and as counterproductive as the Democrats, what do we do? And the realization is the same story is true with religion as it is with politics. Until people are willing to walk away from political and religious delusions and to actually consider evidence and reason, you can't reach them. Now, we're hopeful that with the majority of Americans finally says, hell no, we won't go to this president when he wanted to engage in another war and start bombing Syria, that there is a very large cross-section of Americans that have come to realize that their government is not the solution, that it's the problem. That so many Americans are becoming disenfranchised with their government and are no longer voting. Religions are vastly less popular today in the West than they were 20 or 30 years ago for exactly the same reason. And so there's an ever-growing percentage of the population who, for the first time, are open to the reality that religion and politics are the problem, they are not the solution. And once they have reached that point where their minds are open, those who are inquisitive and still want to know the truth, want to find out if there is hope, then they will be receptive to what we are sharing here, Yahweh's Torah, His offer regarding not only the covenant relationship, but the byproduct of the covenant, which is our salvation. It is the hope of this program. It is the hope of the Torah. So it really is this simple. All religions, from Christianity to Islam, including Judaism, are shown to be false expressly because they claim authorization from a source that they contradict. So Satan responded, enticing Yahweh. He says, because truly the mighty one, God, knows that indeed in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will exist like God, knowing, being aware of, and acknowledging both good and bad. is again a half-truth. Chawa already existed like a god. She did. God made Chawa in his image. He did. In fact, Chawa was made in the image of the set-apart spirit of God. So it was true. You will be like God when you eat of that fruit because you're like God right now. It was a half-truth. Does God know that? Absolutely. That was true as well. Will your eyes be opened when you eat, consume that which God has guided you to avoid? Yeah, they will be. Will you gain in your knowledge of good? No. That was untrue. But he didn't say you were going to gain in your knowledge of good. He just said you will know, be aware of, and acknowledge good. Well, she already knew good. She was already fully aware and acknowledged good. All that she was going to gain was an awareness of that which is raw, bad, morally impure, harmful, and distressing. Yes, that would make her more like God, but it wouldn't be good. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is true that half-truths are much more deceitful and beguiling than outright lies. You know, the fact that there's some accurate statements mixed in with the lies in Paul's letters simply makes his lies more beguiling. This was true. Much of what Satan said. He says, because truly God knows that indeed in the day that you eat it or from it, your eyes will be opened. Now, her eyes were open then. She was observing good. So that was an accurate statement. Your eyes will be open. Her eyes were open right then. So it's true. But this idea that you're going to see that which you have not seen before, that's pretty enticing. Oh, boy, I'm really going to have understanding then. But her eyes were open right then. It was true. And you will exist like God. Well, she was existing like God now. God told us twice. Both times twice, he was redundant, using different terms, saying that we were created in his image. In the image of God, we were created. He used different words for image and repeated that statement twice using different words. We're literally a three-dimensional version of a seven-dimensional creator. Yeah, it's just like, you know, when Disney created Mickey Mouse, a three-dimensional creator with a two-dimensional object. In this case, we're three-dimensional, stuck in time, the fourth dimension, when you analyze seven dimensions. But we were created in the image of God. What he said was true. Knowing, being aware of, and acknowledging good, well, God already made good available to them. They knew it already. That was true. And it would be true that if they ate from that tree, she was going to gain for the first time an understanding of evil. Everything Satan said was true. It's just misleading. Removed from its context. Twisted in its implication. So, up to this point, all Adam and Chawa were aware of, recognized and experienced, acknowledged and knew, was Yahweh and the sheltered garden enclosure that was not only conducive to life that he had created for him or for them, but also pure bliss, total joy, enormous satisfaction. Everything was good. It was festive. It was pleasing. It was prosperous and beautiful. Tob. By the way, God says his Torah is Tob. Until evil's advocate slithered into the garden, they had no knowledge whatsoever of anything that was bad, that was sad, that was impure, harmful, or distressing, even deadly. Eden was paradise, after all, the place of great joy. Gan Eden, of delight, of ultimate pleasure, of extreme satisfaction, of overwhelming gladness. So it was true that by eating the fruit, Chawa would add an awareness of evil and suffering to those pleasant things that she already knew and had experienced. But since she had experienced everything good, the implied benefit was obviously bogus. It was counterproductive. Satan was adding a negative, thereby diminishing the sum. The bottom line to all this is that an awareness of that which is bad, evil, sad, distressing, and harmful destroys conditions that are conducive to life and precludes someone living with a perfect God. And that is why Yahweh no longer remembers our sins once they are forgiven. They are forgotten. It is why a new universe will be created, a perfect one, at the end of the millennial Shabbat, at the end of the thousand-year celebration of Sukkah. In the realm of immortality, there is no benefit of knowing something which is distressful or harmful. And so God will prevent sorrow by allowing us to travel in time, because that time will be a dimension that we can maneuver in, as is the case with light and energy. But yet, to witness beginnings of life and of creation, but without being able to see our own sin, the harm that man has perpetrated on his fellow man. That's why a new universe will be created, giving us carte blanche to explore without ever being saddened by what we find. Moreover, Adam and Chawa were already like God, as I've said. This, too, was a half-truth designed to beguile. At the conclusion of the sixth day, after having created animal life, God said, "Let us produce Adam, the man, in our image, teslim, resemblance, pattern, and model, like an unused root meaning shade, one dimension fewer. After our likeness, damuth, similitude, and manner, meaning in a comparable way to resemble, we're going to create them." We'll pick this story up and Shattering Myths tomorrow. May Yah bless you all.